This year,
with Nimoy Nishmas, my son Danny Fry, who was murdered 21 years ago today in Erlin Mikmash.
And what would be his Hebrew name?
Shalom Daniel ben Avraham Alevi.
Shalom Daniel ben Avraham Alevi. Yeah. So we're here on Daf Tzadi Heyom and Aleph. And if you count down from the top of the page, we're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down. We have a pretty challenging sugya today. The Gemara quotes only 4 or 5 words in the Mishnah, so let's go back to the Mishnah, and we'll see the Mishnah inside at the beginning of Hagozal Eitzim. The Mishnah at the end of the second line says that Gozal Para Mu'uberes, he stole a pregnant cow, Viyold, and she gave birth. So she gave birth in the Rishus of the Gazlan, or Rachel to Una, he stole a sheep that's full of wool on its back. The Gazlan in the Rishus of the Gazlan, he shears off the wool. So the Mishnah paskins that Mishalem Dmei Para Homedes Leled Udmei Rachel Homedes Li Gazes, which means that the Gazlan is Kona B'Shinui. We're not sure, again, as we pointed out in the Mishnah itself, whether he's Kona the Para B'Shinui or only the Vlad B'Shinui. But certainly he's Kona the Vlad B'Shinui. The Vlad was a future offspring. Now the Vlad is a viable being, so it's a change in the identity of the Vlad. And once the Gazlan is Kona the Vlad, he doesn't have to replace, doesn't have to return the Vlad. He can keep it for himself. And in that sense, the Gazlan makes a profit on the deal. He has to pay the nigzal, on the other hand, the value of a para mu'uberes, correct, of a pregnant cow. So that's what we have in our Mishnah. Now, the Gemara quotes a braisa, Tana Rabbanan. This braisa records 3 tanoim. My hope for today is to get by at least 2 out of the 3. I'm not sure if we'll get to the 3rd. And we'll see how it goes. Are we ready? Ready to go? I mean, this again, you have to be all gassed up for this again. Tana Rabbanan. Hagozel Rachel Ugzaza Parviyolda Mishalim Osa Vesgizosev Vesvadosev Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rav Meir seems to reject the entire concept of Shinui, and that's going to be the first tzad in the Suffolk. The Gemara is going to vacillate about Rabbi Meir. And therefore, he has to return everything, the whole kit and caboodle. He has to return to the nigzal, the para together with the vlad, or the rachel together with the giza, exactly as he has it today. I mean, you would think, well, there's a certain increase, a certain increment in the, or appreciation, if you will, in the value of what he stole, and that appreciation took place in the Rishus of the Gazlan, and it was a result of this Shinui in which the Giza was cut off the sheep, or the Vlad was born from the Parah, and therefore let the Gazlan be Kona B'Shinui. No, says Rabbi Meir, I reject the concept of Shinui. The Gazlan is going to have to return everything, even the Vlad and even the Giza. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hagzela Choseres Peinel. He only has to return the cow or the sheep itself. The profits that he gets from the Vlad and from the Giza, that belongs to the Gazlan. In which case, Rabbi Yehuda is built on what principle? Shinui Kona. That the Gazlan acquires ownership through Shinui. And therefore, when the Parah gives birth and the Vlad is born in the Rishus of the Gazlan, that's a whole new entity, and that is something that belongs to the Gazlan. How much will he have to pay? So the Rabbi Yehuda seems to assume that the object that was stolen, whether it's the Parah or the Rachel, is going to be returned Be'eneha. Be'eneha means as is. He'll have to. Now, Rashi adds something very important. If you take a look at Rashi, which starts 6 lines down from the top of the Amud, Gzela Choseres Beineha, Kmo Shehi. In other words, now he returns the Parah and the par is empty, it's no longer pregnant, reikonis, yachzereni returns that. But that's not the end of the end of the story here. The gazlan doesn't just get away with returning the gzela, meaning the para be'en in its original form, because it's no longer in its original form. So be'en means the physical, tangible object, meaning the para itself. But hadar mishalim dmei gizos v'ubar, he still has to pay out of pocket. And this is already, you know, signing a check that's going to make up the difference between a para reikonis and a para muberes. That increment he has to pay for. So that's what Rashi says over here. A hadar, in addition to returning the cow itself, he also has to pay for the devaluation, if you will, of the cow, as it were, from the time of the gzela until the time of payment. Or in the case of the Rachel, he's got to make up for the ubar. Just give me 1 minute, we'll read the whole Rashi, and then, because again, I have to apologize, you know, I get distracted, and I apologize again. I please accept my apologies. I'm really excited to hear your comments, but I need to get to a certain point, because otherwise I get all flustered and all confused. This is a very complicated sugya. So again, I beg mechila. He says, "Vahadar mishalim dmei gizo." He has to pay the value of gizo vi ubar. But what value of gizo vi ubar? Again, you know, today the gizo and the ubar as a final product, as an entity unto itself, is worth a lot. So Rashi says, no, he pays the dmei gizos v'uber kemo shahaya b'shas gzela. He does not pay the value of the giza or the value of the vlad as it is today, but rather the value of the giza and the vlad in its potential state, as it were, at the time of the gzela. Okay, we'll skip the next four words because that has to do with Rabbi Meir's shita. But aval davim shebishas hagzela mishalim, he will have to pay the value of the para, as it were, at the time of the gzela. And therefore, if he's returning the para reikonis, and again, just to reiterate the example that we gave last week, let's say the para reikonis is worth on the market 500, a para muberes is worth on the market 600. The calf itself, the vlad itself, is worth 200. The gazlan, according to Rabbi Yehuda, will return the para. The para is now reikonis. How much is it worth? 500. But the para that he stole was worth 600. So therefore, the gazlan will have to make up that discrepancy between 500 and 600. Aval damim shebishas gzela mishalim, says Rashi. Don't think that he can get away with murder here. He's got to pay the damim shebishas gzela. So he returns the par of en, but that's only returning, in effect, how much money? What's the value of the par 5? So now he has to make up the extra 100 by signing a check. He's going to pay a combination of a tangible para plus for a cash value or currency value, and together the sum total of A plus B will be 600. The calf itself he keeps because he was kona bishinui. The calf itself is worth on the market 200. So he's paying 600, right? He's paying 600, which is the para in its value when he stole, correct? But at the end of the day, he's left with 200. So the par itself, he's returning. The gazlan doesn't take a loss on that. That's what he stole, right? But he would have gained, let's say, and now the para is worth 500. He stole a par that was worth 600. He's going to have to make up that difference, but he's pocketing the vlad, which is worth 200, so he ends up with a profit of 100. Okay, now I'll take your question, Alan. I'm sorry, I just wanted to make sure I had the Rashi.
It wasn't a question, but you made a mistake. You said the Rachel and its Uber. You meant
the Rachel and its Giza, right? So the Rachel, again, is worth, with the wool on its back, it's worth 6. Without the wool on its back, it's worth 5. the Giza itself, once it's cut off, which sheared off the back of the sheep, is worth 200, and it turns out that crime pays. Okay, so that's the profit that the Gazla makes, and that's all based on the halacha. The predicate is what? Shinui is kona.
He doesn't actually pay. It costs him less.
It depends what he's paying. If he's giving the para back because the para is still intact, he's only paying 100. Right. If the para is gone, he's going to be paying 600.
Right.
But in any event, he's paying, and he's paying kishas hagzeilo. Rabbi Shimon Omer, and this is very confusing, Roim Osa Keilu Hishuma Etzlo Bekesef. Rabbi Osai, we're going to get to the sugya of Rabbi Shimon a little bit later on, possibly today. But let's just point out, so that we at least have some, shall we say, flavor of what Rabbi Shimon is talking about, that whenever you see this phrase in halacha, of Shuma Etzlo Bekesef, that phrase, although it appears here in Gzela, is a borrowed phrase. And the original source of that phrase of Shuma Etzlo Bekesef is not here in Masechta Bava Kama, but rather in Masechta Ksubas. When a woman gets married, she brings into the marriage two different types of possessions. One is called Nichse Malug, which means that those nechassim are transferred over. No, I'm sorry. Those nechassim belong to the wife. They remain in her possession. The husband only gets the benefits of those nechassim. So, for example, if she brings in an apartment, a flat into the marriage, he rents out this flat, and the rental fees he pockets and puts into his bank account. That's called nichsei malug. That's not relevant to us. There's another category of nechassim that's called nichsei son barasol, and that's called shuma olav bekesef. What does it mean? That at the time of the marriage they evaluate, that's called shuma, the exact market value of those nechassim. The nechassim now are transferred over to the husband in event of divorce or death. The payment to the isha will be that exact shuma. Meaning, if let's say she brings in karka nitzei tzon barzel at the time of the marriage and it was evaluated at the price of 1,000, she's guaranteed in the collection of the ksuba 1,000. What if it went up in value? That's his profit. What if it went down in value? That's his loss. And Rabbi Shimon is saying something very fascinating. That basically when a gazlan steals a paramu beres, it has the same identical status as shuma olo etzel bekesem, which means as nichsei tzon barzel. We're going to freeze the value of the para as it were at the time of the gzela. How is this different than Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda says you have to return the para be'en. Rav Shimon says you don't have to return the para be'en. We evaluate the para just like at the time of a marriage we evaluate the nichsei tzon barzel. That price tag is what she'll get, but in the meantime the physical object is transferred into the bailus, the ownership of the baal. Here too the physical object is transferred over to the bailus of the gazlan. We don't know how or why that should work. We evaluate that object, meaning the para muberes, as it were at the time of the gzela, if it was worth 600. Now, if the para goes up in value or down in value, that's either the gain or the loss of the gazlan. He doesn't have to return. He's not required to return the para itself. And that means that the birth of the cow is a shinui, not just vis-a-vis the vlad itself, or in the case of a Rachel, Tuna Giza, in terms of the Giza, but that shinui is chal, even vis-a-vis the para, and even vis-a-vis the Rachel itself. In other words, a pregnant Rachel and a Rachel that already gave birth are two different rechelos. Or a pregnant para and a para that gave birth are two different paras. And therefore, Rav Shimon extends the concept of shinui and the acquisition of the gazlan to incorporate not just the vlad and the giza, but even the para and the rachel. And therefore, the para and the rachel now are transferred over to the ownership of the Goslin through the process of Shinui. Now we evaluate what was the Parah worth, the Rachel worth at the time of the Gzela. And that money, that sum of money is frozen in stone. That's called Nitzei Tzon Baris. So that's just to give a flavor of what Rav Shimon is talking about here. Obviously, the sugya of Rav Shimon is much more complex. So the Gemara chooses now to focus our attention on Rav Meir. Rav Meir came first. And the way we understood Rav Meir is that since the Gazan has to fork over, he has to return both the Para and the Vlad, both the Giza, the Rach and the Giza, it means that Rav Meir completely rejects Shiva. And that's the first tzad in the Gemara. Boilehu, my time of the Rav Meir. And the Gemara's first tzad is Mishum de Kosova Shinui Bimkomo Omeid. Rabbi Meir does not recognize Shinui. And here the Mefarshim want to understand, what does it mean? Does Rabbi Meir completely reject the concept of Shinui? Or does he have a more limited, circumscribed definition of Shinui? Would it be that perhaps, according to Rabbi Meir, the Vlad itself is already considered as if it's a viable being? We have many sugyas that say that that ha'omeg liktzar kekatzar dami anav mamidam dos lebtzura kebtzuras dami, you know, that sometimes the halacha foresees what's going to happen. Or shall we say simply that Rav Meir rejects the concept of Shinui? So for time being, until we know otherwise, we're going to simplify ourselves, you know, the sugya for ourselves. Rav Meir completely rejects the idea of Shinui. Again, what does he do with the pasuk of Heishiv Sakzela? Asher Gozal Mikol Makol. We had this already in Rav Yochanan back on Sadi Dalit. Rav Yochanan's Mikol Makom was reinterpreted by the sugya. Depends whether it's a Shinya Chosel Briyoso, Shinya She'eno Chosel Briyoso. We had a great long discussion about that, but Rabbi Meir took it to its logical conclusion. There is no such thing as Shinya Gazlan cannot be Kone. Wherever the object is, it belongs to the Nigzal. The Nigzal's Bialus is unaffected by Shinui. And therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, in the case where you steal a pregnant cow and it gives birth, you have to give back. The Gazan has to return not only the cow, but also the vlad. Odil, the Gemara itself is very inhibited, very uncomfortable, postulating or presenting Rabbi Meir in such an extreme way that he denies completely the halacha of Shinui. You may recall, Rabbi Osai, that Abaye, back on Daf Tzadi Dalid, was of the opinion that there are no less than five Tanoim that maintain that Shinui b'mkoma omeid and reject the concept of Shinui. However, Rava rejects every single one of those five Tanoim, including Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says if you offer a Zona for an Esnan Zona Chitim and you convert it into Solas, Rabbi Meir, Beit Shammai say that the solus is still possible in Mizbeach and it maintains its status as Esnan Zona. Comes along Rav and he says that's not because Shini ain't a Kona. Even Beit Shammai agrees that Shini is Kona. In Gzela it's got to be Kasher Gozal. Says Rav, there's a separate halach in Mizbeach called Mos L'Mizbeach. And the halach of Mos L'Mizbeach depends upon, shall we say, the chemical or physical structure of the object. If the molecular structure is there, even though it's been changed, but it's still there, there was nasa ba'avera, then it's mos l'mizbeach. And Rava does this consistently, shooting down, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever seen, they have these machines that throw balls at you and then you're supposed to hit them. That's how they practice, whether it's tennis or baseball, I don't know, whatever sport you like. And that's what Rava does. Every time Abai throws another ball at him and has another Tana who seems to assume that Shini b'mkoma omeid, Rava smashes it. He says, no, that's not a Shinui, or that's a case where the Torah says, despite the Shinui, it's mitzvah b'avera, it's a uberach nitz Hashem. At the end of the day, once you accept Rava, no one holds that Shini b'mkoma omeid. And that's why I think, again, Lefianiyas Daiti, it could be that the Gemara is very inhibited, is very uncomfortable with the position that Rabbi Meir denies Shinui. O Dilma, be Alma Shinui Kone. Rabbi Meir also likewise agrees that Shinui is Kone. Hacha Knasa Huda Kakonis. I would add two words, Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that Chazal instituted a knas, even though money is really coming to him. The Gazlan deserves to be Kone, at least the Vlad Bishinui, but nevertheless, Chachamim undermine and they his, the Gazlan's ability to be Kone Bishinui. And that operates through what? Knas. Now, knas again subdivides into two categories. There's something called a knas d'oraisa. What would be a classical case of knas d'oraisa that we discussed at great length in the previous perek? Kefel or dal vehe of a ganav, correct? A ganav pays back twice. A gazlan doesn't, but a ganav does. That's called a knas d'oraisa. You have ones, you have mafata, according to Rabbi Kiva, zomim is a knas. There are many cases where the Torah engenders a knas. It's a penalty. A financial penalty, not just a corporeal penalty. But there's something called a knas derabanan. Every knas derabanan is predicated on what principle? Rabosa, we've discussed it many times. What is the overriding principle that grants the chazal the authority to take someone's mammon and be mafkir's mammon? Hefker, bezen hefker, wonderful. So here, according to the second side in Rabbi Meir, we're going to flex the muscle and activate the principle of Hefker Bezen Hefker. And basically going to say that even though the Gazlan is the proud owner, according to Torah law, of this Vlad, of this Giza, based on Shinui Kone, nevertheless, the Rabbanan are not going to allow him to get away with it. Crime doesn't pay. Right? Crime doesn't pay. Or, to use a phrase that appears very often in Chazal, Shelo Yechote Niskar, right? We don't want him to be a chote and come away with a profit from it. Either because he doesn't deserve it, he's a criminal, or because we want to have a deterrent. You should know that you want to go ahead and commit this crime, you're a first class robber. You should know that at the end of the day you're going to gain nothing from it. The law is going to catch up with you. So that's called knas. Now, Rabosai, for those of you who already are familiar, you've prepared the sugya, what's the difference between a case where the Torah doesn't give you the rights to mamon, and B, a case where the Chachamim institute a knas? I'll give you a hint, it starts with a shin and ends with a gimel. And it has a vav and a gimel in the middle. What's that called?
Shogit.
Okay, you didn't catch the hint, so I had to give it away. Because usually, and not always, there are exceptions, when the Rabbanan institute a knas, they only do so for what? For a mazin. He's a mazin, he's a no goodnik, he's a robber, he's a thief, he's a criminal. Then we're going to be mafkir your mammon through hefker bezin. Hefker, that's called knas the Rabbanan. But if you're a shogeg nebuch, you know, through no fault of your own, you know, somebody offers to sell you something to, and you have no suspicion, you have no reason to suspect he's a ganav. I'm not talking about these guys who approach you on the street. You know, I don't know if you've seen it in Manhattan. I don't know if you've, you know, they flood you. You know, they sell you these, you know, these appliances that sell for who knows what. They give it to you slash price. You know, I would wonder about that. You know what I'm saying? But in a normal case, you know, a person seems to be reputable and he's selling you various objects, and you buy the bait. It turns out that you're a fence, that you're really buying stolen goods, but through no fault of your own. So we can look the other way. That's called the shogeg. And that's what the Gemara is going to develop here in the case of the dyer, right? D-Y-E-E-R, I guess. No, D-Y-E-E-R. Is it two E's or one E? One E. Okay. I would have put a hyphen, you know, a dyer. So he's not deliberate about stealing something. He inadvertently painted it or dyed it the wrong color. That, I would say, is a gazlan b'shogeg. And we'll see whether or not the knas of Rabbi Meir applies. So in any event, this whole sugya now with the tashmas, one after the other, is going to try to clarify what does Rabbi Meir hold in general about the concept of Shinui Kona. Does he embrace the sheet of Shinui Kona, or does he completely reject it? And even if he accepts the shita, the principle of Shinui Kona, nevertheless he suspends it in a case where a gazlan is making a profit on the deal. What's that called when the gazlan steals something and he's about to make a profit on it if we don't impose the knas?
Niskar,
or in the Gemara's language it's called what? Shvach, shin, beis, ches, because the Gemara now is going to embark on a very, very strict contrast between two cases, two scenarios. There's a case where the stolen object went up in value, and that increment is something that the Gazlan would love to pocket for himself, and crime pays. That's called Shvach. Or there's something called Khash. Khash is where instead of the value going up, appreciating, the value of the object went down. You can imagine if the Ganav steals an animal and he starves it to death. And the animal, not to death, I mean the animal's still walking on fours, but it's very different than it was when it was stolen. It's a lean cow, you know, if you go back to Yosef and Paro. So that's called Khash. You even have Khash where the Gazlan somehow beats up the animal. He might physically injure the animal, break its leg or whatever it is. That's also called Khash. And that's what we're going to see now in the Toshma. The Gemara is going to say, L'may nafkei minu. Even before we get to the Toshma, what's the difference between Rav Meir the First and Rav Meir the Second? Rav Meir the First, that he denies the whole concept of what? Of Shinui? Or Rav Meir the Second, that Rav Meir embraces the concept of Shinui, just he imposes a knas. Again, we're always focused on one question. We should never lose sight of this question. Why does Rabbi Meir require that the Gazan return the Vlad and the Giza to the Nigzal? Is it because Shinui Eino Kone? Right, Shinui Eino Kone, therefore he was never Kone B'Shinui. If he wasn't Kone B'Shinui, obviously who owns the animal and its Vlad? The Nigzal. That's called Aroy Ashbach. Are you familiar with that phrase? Meaning, any time I own something, anything that accrues, any profits or benefits are mine until proven otherwise. Meaning, there's something called a Kinyan Haguf and a Kinyan Peros. So I could, let's say, own the Guf HaKak and I could sell you the Peros, and then you get the Peros. But if I don't sell you the Kinyan Peros, then they're mine. That's called Aroy. Aroy means my karka. Ashbach. It went up in value. So therefore, with regard to the Para or the Rachel, it's Aroy Ashbach. Then until we can establish, and unless we can establish, the Gazan was Kone B'Shinui, then the Giza and the Vlad belongs to whom? To the owner, to the Nigzal. That's called Aroy Ashbach. So what did Rav Meir say? Did Rav Meir say that the Gazan has to return the Giza or the Vlad because of Aroy Ashbach? Meaning he completely ignores and rejects the principle of Shinui. Shinui Bimkomome. Or no, Rav Meir agrees that fundamentally the Gazan has rights on a Torah level to the Giza and to the Vlad, but the Rabbanu will mafkia those rights. And that's called Knas. So what's the Nafkimina? I mean, is the Gemara... is the Gemara just vacillating? Iboilu, you know, the Yeshiva Bachrim, Iboilu, back in the Beis Medrash, they like to declare Chakiris. You know, theoretical Chakiris. But you see, name. The Gemara doesn't want theoretical Chakiris. The Gemara wants to know, if I can use a term that at least in America, the lawyers use the term cut ice. Are you familiar with that? You know, how does it cut ice? That's a term from the legal community. Yeah, I took a few courses in law in graduate school, so they used to always talk about how does it cut ice? Meaning, what's the nafkamina? We want to know the nafkamina. There are, by the way, Gdoli Yisrael, and I've heard it firsthand, who cler hakirs that have no nafkamina whatsoever. Most of them come from a certain city in Cleveland. A certain city, I meant to say, in Ohio. Okay, I gave it up. Okay, there's a certain yeshiva where they'll just ask whether the cup is half full or half empty. My nafkamina. There is no nafkamina. Okay, but it's good for a chakira. You know, it's like they asked one of the Magidi Shirim, why did he say the shir? He says, well, it's muchach. So he says, what's muchach about it? I didn't see the proof. He says, because I was muchach to say the shir. I had no choice. So that's called a chakir. I have a friend who once came into Rav Soloveitchik's shir. On the first day in the shir, the Rav of Soloveitchik asked for a hesber. Can anybody explain what the issue is? You know, so what? This guy had just come from Tells. So he said over a chakira. And the Rav had never seen him in his life. He says, Tells a chakira, he said. The Rav almost had Ruach HaKodesh. But in Brisk, there was no such thing as a theoretical chakir. It's always got to be my nafkimina. So my nafkimina. So the Gemara answers, Lehecha dekachasha mikchash. Okay? So instead of the animal that was stolen going up in value, went down in value, if you hold that Shinu Bimkomo Omeid, meaning that Reb Meir denies the entire halacha of Shini, then what does the Gazan have rights to tell the Nigzal? You remember, Rabosa, we spoke about stealing chametz, Erev Pesach, right? Erev Pesach. So he stole chametz. The chametz is worth 100 or whatever, 100 shekels. Very expensive piece of chametz, like a bottle of whiskey. After Pesach, what's it worth?
Zip.
Because chametz shavu l'vav Pesach. It's also by law. Nevertheless, the Gazan could say, here's your object, and fly the kite. You know, you take the object. It's racial chol lefanecha. So if you hold shinui b'mkomo omid, nevach the gazlan, the what you call the nigzal, is stuck with this lean cow. Again, now I gave you a case where the gazlan broke the leg of the cow, or the gazlan starved the cow, and that's why it's worth nothing. Not a fluctuation in market conditions. What would you say about those cases? Even if Shini ain't a kona, there's another reason why the Nigzal could sue the Gazan. What's that called? Starts with a mem and ends with a kuf.
Mazik.
Has a zayin and a yud in the middle. A mazik, right? You guessed it. Very good. I'm very impressed. After I gave you the full letter. Okay. He's a mazik. It could be the Gazan is chayv b'toras. Mazik. But let's say it went down through no fault of the Gazan. Or let's say it was Grum of Inezekin, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So the cash now is not something that's collectible under the law of what? Of Mazik. So how does the Gazlan, how does the Gazlan get away with murder here in this case? The answer is Hareshel Chol Fanecha. If you can't sue me, says the Gazlan to the Nigzal, for Mazik under the law of Mazik, then take your Gzela and run with it. This is your object, that's what it is, and that's what you're left with. That's according to the first tzad in Reb Meir, that Reb Meir holds that what? Shinui b'mkomo omid. Let's just finish the second tzad. Odilma, if we hold like the second tzad, what's the second tzad in Reb Meir? Reb Meir embraces the sheet of what? Help me out here, Reb Osai. Shinui kone. Ella what? We want it to clip the wings of the Gazlan from his shvach, from his knas haloch of what, of profit, that he should make a profit on it. In this case, does it make sense for the chachamim to implement the knas? Absolutely not. If the purpose of the knas, that's the objective, is to cut down the Gazlan from his profits, then adarabah, there's no reason to impose a knas in the case of chash. Let's go over the logic. Again, I want to just make sure we're all on the same page here. In the case of Kash, what are you going to tell him? If Shinui is Kone, then the Gazlan is going to have to pay what? Kishas Hagzela. In other words, as the Paro is worth full-blown and healthy, he's going to have to pay the full value of the cow. That's because Shinui is Kone. So in that case, in the balance of forces here, we would love to apply the principle of Shini Kona. According to the second side of Rabbeinu embraces Shini Kona. No, we're going to say Shini Ein Kona according to the second side. Why? Because Knas makes no sense. Because then you can impose the Knas. And who's going to suffer as a result of this Knas? Rabbeinu said, who's going to suffer? Who's going to lose now as a result of this knas? The Nigzal, because the Nigzal is going to get stuck with a hinkadinka animal, you know, an animal that's lame and lean. Therefore, says the Gemara, if I go with the second side of Rabbi Meir, I would rather stick to the Doraisa halacha. What's the Doraisa halacha, the second side of Rabbi Meir? Shinui Kone. That makes a lot of sense. Now, the Gazan's going to have to pay Kishas HaGzeila. He's going to have to give the full value of the power back to the Nigzal. Again, he's going to write a check. Let's leave it at that. Correct? Lost us bleiben azoi. We should leave it exactly that way, because then the Nigzal gets what's fair, what's coming to him. Namely, he gets the full value of Shas HaGzeila. No. We're going to impose a Knas. We're going to suspend the principle of Shini Kone, and we're going to have the Gazan prepare or present, I should say, the hinkadinka cow to the Nigzal, and it's worth a fraction of what is worth the Shas HaGzeila. That makes no sense. Beautiful analysis of an afkamina between this. Again, you and I might have said lo plug, but the Gemara is not operating with lo plug. The Gemara is operating with the premise that a knas will be applied when it achieves an objective. Every knas has its purpose. If it achieves the purpose, we'll implement it. If it has the opposite effect, then we're not going to impose the knas. So the knas is halach and shvach. What it means is that the gazan was kona the shvach b'shinui, and the rabbanon threw the knas on mafkia that kinyan shinui on shvach. But they're not being mafkia the entire halacha of gazel and kona b'shinui, and the nafkamina is in the case of chash.
What about in the case of chash when it's not where the gazel himself did not do anything via dayim or otherwise to lessen the amount? For instance,
so there's no chiyuv mazik.
No, what happened is the price went down just because the market went down. It would have gone down whether it was and they'd be out by them also when they got nixo. And it was unexpected. It wasn't like, you know, you could say, Leila, if it was clear that it was going to go down, that there was an ad in the paper saying, you know, better sell your stuff because it's going to go down, so then it would be a pshi on the part of the Goslin.
But Harvey, you have to go?
Yeah.
All right, we'll see.
But otherwise, what if there's not? I mean, it was all of a sudden, they woke up in the morning and they said, cows are half the price they were before.
So let's just go over this. If there's a fluctuation in market condition, then the crash is because now there's a flood of cows on the market, right? And that brings down the price because of the law of supply and demand.
Right.
So if you hold it, Shini ain't a kone, then for sure there was no kinyan here. But the truth is that even if you hold that Shini is Kona, right, there was no Shini over here. So I would say, Mimonavshach, in that case, the Gazlan has a right to say, Areshal Cholofanecha. The problem here is that we really have a bona fide physical Shinui. And the question is, can we allow the Gazlan to say Shinui? Can we allow the Gazlan to say, Areshal Cholofanecha? If Shini is Eina Kona, he could say, Areshal Chol Fanecha. Look at this physical change that depreciates the cow, and that's your problem, Mr. Nigzal, because Areshal Chol Fanecha. That's if Shini Vimkomo Omen. If, on the other hand, Shinui is Mufka because of Knas, are we going to be Mafkia, the Kenyan Shinui here, for the benefit of the Nigzal?
By imposing a knas?
Absolutely not.
But that means you're saying that.
Alan, that's that adkan.
No, adkan.
Again,
your definition.
Again, Rabosai. Again, let's try to get through a daf gemara. Go ahead, Alan.
All I'm saying, you're saying is that if a price change itself is not considered a shinui.
Correct.
It has to be a physical
shinui. Correct.
That's all.
Correct, that's what I said. So what's your issue?
I wasn't sure you said that.
Yeah, okay. Gazal toshma, okay? Gazal behema vizkina. He stole an animal and it got old. That's another kind of a shina. Fine? So I'm going to skip the next two words. Mishalim kishas hagzela. What's being said over here, mishalim kishas hagzela? In two words, Rabosai, what's being said over here? Mishalim kishas hagzela. That's shinui kone, correct? Shinui kone. And not only that, Rabbi Meir is not going to argue. There's going to be another issue here that's going to come to the fore about the status of karka vis-a-vis gzela. That's going to be a major issue here as we go down the pipeline here. But as far as metaltalin are concerned, namely the case of para, there is no debate that shinui is kone. Correct? That shinui is kone. Which means that Rabbi Meir is also embracing the opinion of shinui kone. What would Rabbi Meir say if we accept the first sad in the Gemara Ziboilahu, namely that shinui b'mkomo omed, about the case of paravizkina? Everybody, what would Rabbi Meir be saying in the first sad that shinui ain't a kone? That he wouldn't pay kishas hagzeil. What would he do with this alta fair, the alta cow? He would return it as is. What's that called again when you return it as is? Hareishal chol fanech. Again, Rabosai, it's this sugya can really be simplified if you accept the following equation. Like A equals A. It's almost a tautology. Shinu bimkomo omed equals hareishal chol fanech. Which means that it works in favor of the gazlan, shinu bimkomo omed, in a case of kachasha, in a case where it goes down into the valley. Why? Because he can say hareshal kolafaneh. So despite the fact that there's been a major change in the para, nevertheless, the gazan can return the para. That's called shinubim komo omet. Yet, our price that we're studying now says that para is kina, mishalim, everybody, demei, haparkishas, hagzela. What does it mean? Shinu is kona. And Rav Meir doesn't whisper a word. No objection on the part of Rav Meir. Vaislais that Rav Meir himself agreed that Shinui is Kone. And that leads us to the second side in the Gemara Sofik, which means that the whole business here in the case of Shvach, where Rav Meir forces the Gazan to give back the Vlad and the Gizitz only because of a Knas, but Meikra Dindo Raisa, if not for the Knas Rabbanon, it would have been Shinui Kone. And the Gazan is the proud owner of the Gizan and the Vlad. What is the subject of the machlokas? So this is all a digression now from our main sugya, and that is avadim v'hizkin. Okay. Now, Rabbi Meir is going to say that in the case of avadim v'hizkinu, hareishal cholofanech. It means that even though Rabbi Meir adopts, he accepts the sheet of what? Of Shinui Kone, and therefore in the case of Behemosh is Kina, he has the right to say he has the obligation to pay the original price and value of the Behemoth as it were at the time that he stole it. That's called Shinui Kone. And he cannot say Arishal Cholofanech because Shinui Kone. And that's called Mishalim, Kishas Agzel, which even Rabbi Meir accepts. But nevertheless, in the case of Avadim, there is no such halacha as Shinui Kone. Why is there no halacha of Shinui Kone in the case of an Eved? So Rashi points out that there's an equation between an Eved and Karka. This is Dibra Maschil, B'Avodim Amalo, HaReishal Cholofanecha, D'Avoda, D'Avda, Kimikarka, Dami. So let's give the classical example of Avda, Kimikarka, Dami. Let's say, for example, you claim that I stole two servants, two Avodim. And I claim I only stole one and not the second. That's called Modeh V'Miktzas, who takes a Shvur. However, since there's an equation between Eved and Karka, we have a principle called Ein Nishboim Ala Karkos. There's no such thing as a Shvur on Karka. So that's going to be your classical case of Eved Hukash LeKarka. There's no shvua on karka, and therefore, ipso facto, there's no shvua on an eved. This has nothing to do, Rabosai, with the hekesh between eved and isha. It doesn't mean that just that since a karka is potter from zman groma, so to an eved is potter from zman groma. Just joking with you. But an eved is hukash le karka. Oh, says Rabbi Meir, let's take this hekesh to its logical conclusion, and we apply it here in the case of Shinui, and we're going to say the following. Just like in Karka, there's no such thing as being Kone b'Shinui. We'll explain that in just a minute. So too, there's no such thing as being Kone and Eved b'Shinui. And therefore, says Rabbi Meir, even though the Eved became an old Eved, nevertheless, the Gazan is not Kone the Eved, and therefore we could say, HaReishal Cholofanecha, here's your Alta Eved, take it and leave. Why is there no such thing as Shinui in Karka? Right, that's the original. And the answer is because of a rule, a principle called Karka Eina Nigzeles. That's what Rashi points out very beautifully here. He says, Karka Hadra Be'ene. Wherever the Karka is, it always belongs to the owner. It never, there's no such thing as transferring ownership by virtue of gzela. The only way of transferring ownership on a piece of karka is through hakna. But without hakna, the absence of any hakna, of an active transfer of ownership, there's no other way that I can take your karka. And that's called the ena nigzeles liknos legazlan. And therefore, since the gazlan has no kinyonim of gzela on a piece of karka, and therefore he cannot be kone with shinui, because shinui is only meaningful in the case of a gazlan, which means that a gazlan takes the object out of the reshus of the nigzal, and now when the object changes, there's a mitzvah v'heishim hagzela. But if we mafkia that mitzvah because it's not ke'en she'gazal through shinui, then the gazlan acquires ownership on the object. But in the case of karka, which is ain't an nigzelis, there's no chiyuv hashava, the object wherever it is in the possession of the nigzal, kol hecha, wherever it's found, and therefore there's no kinyan shinui with regard to karka, says Rav Meir. By virtue of the equation between karka and avodim, there's no shinui in avodim. Eved ain't an nigzelis. We'll soon see why the Chachamim reject this shita of Rav Meir. But now let's get back to behema. What happens in the case of behema shizkina? Says the Gemara, Amri, Rabbi Meir. I'm sorry, I skipped. The ilu Rabbi behema, but with regard to behema, which became old, and Rabbi Meir did not disagree, and he asked the pekishas hagzela. The isal kedaitik sov Rabbi Meir shinu bimkomo omer. If Rabbi Meir rejected the concept of shinui, is a filu behema nami. Rabbi Meir should have argued with the chachamim even vis-a-vis behema and said that in the case of behema, he has a right to say again. What's our equation? Shinu bimkomo equals what? Harei shel chalfa necha elav shmamino. Rabbi Meir is a kasover. Rabbi Meir shinu. Even Rabbi Meir agrees that shinu is kona. And as I said at the start here, this sugya, the Gemara is very inhibited, very uncomfortable with the position that Rabbi Meir rejects the concept of shinui. Rav Meir adopts the position of shinui kone. So why in the case of the vlad does the gazan have to return the vlad? Hocha, the reason in the case of shvach is knasa hu dekakonis. Rav Meir insists on imposing a knas. Amri, the Gemara says, you know what? That's not how you have to read Rav Meir. Rav Meir was not saying, I'm arguing with you in the case of avadim, but implying that I agree with you in the case of behema. I disagree with you in the case of behema as well. In my view, hareishal chalafanecha applies because shinu bimkomo omed. But I'm not going to fight with you on that platform, on that turf. I know very well, Rabbi Meir, that that's a lost cause. You chachamim are absolutely committed to the position of shinu bimkomo omed. But Rabbi Meir, l'divrei d'rabbanan k'amar lo l'didi shinui ein kona. I hold that you can say hareishal chalafanecha avafilu behema nami. I can say take your behema and run with it. Ela l'didchu, even though the amrisu, you're of the opinion and you're entrenched in that view, I can't budge you from that, that shinui is kona. But odu limios to be avda, in the case of an eved, there's no such thing as shinui. Dikim akarke domi, it has the same status as karka. Ukarkein and exeles, and therefore there's no possibility of being kona the eved b'shinui. And if that's the case, why do you insist, Chachamim, that eved v'hizkin is mishalim kishas hagzela? Why mishalim kishas hagzela? Why not just say areishal cholfa necha? Comes out now that l'divreim d'rabbanan karmelu, who Rabbi Meir himself holds that shinui is eno kone. He rejects the concept of shinui. He would maintain that even in the case of behema v'zkina, the gazan has the right to say harei shalcha lefanecha, and he would disagree with the chachamim on that count as well. And now the machlokus is whether or not the principle of eved hukash lekarka to be mafkia gzela and certainly a kinyan shinui applies. Amri leira, but the rabbanon say lo avda kimitaltalei dami, and therefore since eved has the same status as metaltalei, there's gzela in avodim, and if there's gzela b'avodim, there's shinu in avodim, and if there's shinu in avodim, therefore if he stole an eved and became old, then he has to pay kishas hagzil. But Torah hiva lomar anitzorach. Do the Rabbanan disagree? Do they reject the principle of Eved Hukash Lakarka? that principle is so well entrenched. We don't find, for example, in Bava Metzia, in the Sugya of Shvua, that the Rabbanan disagree with Eved Hukash Lekarka. So here I want to suggest the following machlokas. We know that there's something called Shibud Nechasim. That means if I borrow 1,000 from you, the Malva, you can actually collect that chov from my karka, even if I went ahead and I did what? I sold the karka. You can collect from the Lekufas. That's called a Shibud. And we pask in Shibud Doraisa at the end of Bava Basra, but that only applies to karka. Metaltalin, on the other hand, is Eino Mishtabel Bal Chov. So if I own a diamond ring and I sell it to you, he, the Malva, cannot collect it from you, the Lokeach. The reason for that is there's no Shibud on Metaltalin, there's only Shibud on Karak. What about an Evet? If I own an Evet, I'm the Lova, and I sell it to you, and you're the Lokeach, and the Malva, if need be, does he have recourse by default to collect that Evid from the Lokeach? Do we equate an Evid with Karka? Or do we equate an Evid with Metaltalin? So the Gemara establishes in Masechta Bava Basra in the third Perek that there's no Shibud on an Evid. Fekta Gemara, ay, Evid Hukash LaKarka. So the Gemara gives a very unclear answer. And I and Shom, but I'll tell you what my Rebbe said to interpret that Gemara. He said the following, listen carefully, you have to be a brisker to understand this, but he said that an Eved has a shame karka, but in Heftza he's a Heftza of Metaltel. Gotta be a brisker for that. So what did my Rebbe mean? I'm going to try to explain what I understood. As far as Shibudim are concerned, you need what's called Betichus. Betichus means that the Lover gives the Malva a certain sense of security or collateral, and he tells the Malva, listen buddy, don't worry, I've got a lot of nechasim. If I don't default, I may sell them over to a lokeach, some sucker who's willing to buy it, but you'll have recourse to collect from that lokeach. Why? Because it's mishubut. So the Malva feels secure, that's called betichus, that he'll get back his money, and therefore he's willing to extend the loan. That's only in karka, because there's nothing you can do with karka. Karka is always there. But metaltalin, which go from hand to hand, and you can hide it, stash it away, lock it up in a safe, there's no betichus on metaltalin. So that's what the Rav wanted to say about karka. Why does Gemara insist that, about Evid, I'm sorry. Why does Gemara insist that there's no shibud on Evid, despite the hekesh between Evid and karka? Why not upgrade Evid to the status of karka and say there's a shibud that's chal on Evid? The answer is the Evid bechefta is like metaltalin, because the Evid is not stationary. He runs, he moves, he goes from place to place. Go find him. He's out there, I don't know, fooling around in, I don't know, maybe he's gambling in Atlantic City or wherever the gambling places are here. Maybe Yericho, I don't know.
He gets older.
What do you say when he gets older?
But he gets older. But he doesn't.
Oh, so that's what we're going to talk about now. Excellent. Now that we have this distinction between shame karka, and as far as Shru is concerned, there's something called a shame karka. It has nothing to do with the movability or lack thereof, the mobility, lack thereof, mobility. It's something called a shame karka, and Evid has a shame karka, and if there's no Shvua on Avadu, it's whole sugi whether you could be Megalgal Shvua on Evid, fine, but that's not for us. However, nevertheless, an Evid doesn't have a Heftz of karka. He's not a Heftz of karka, he moves around. Here we have Machlok Shin Rav Meir and the Chachom. So I was thinking the following. What happens as far as Gzeil is concerned? Do we say that the halach of karka, that karka ain't an exelis, is halach in shame karka? Or it's halach in cheftishal karka? Meaning, it's a reflection of the nature of karka. The chachamim of the opinion that the halach of karka in gzelus is halach in the shame karka. Anything that has a shame karka is mufka from gzela. And therefore, an evit, by virtue of the hekesh, has a shame karka, and there's no such thing as gzela in evit. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, understood that Karkein in Gzelus, especially the way Rashi interpreted Rabbi Meir, is a reflection of the nature of Karka, the Chefta Shel Karka. And therefore, Rabbi Meir said that Eved, even though he has a shame Karka, but he's not Hukash Shel Karka as far as the Chefta Shel Karka is concerned. And if he's not a Chefta Shel Karka, therefore, there's Gzela on an Eved. And in fact, I could take an Eved, and I could tie him up, and I could lock him up in a room, and the Eved can't get out. I mean, in that sense, an Eved is very similar to Metalfalin. So I empathize with the Shita of... To Metalfalin, I meant to say. Did I say Karka?
But once he's locked up, he can't move.
No, that's what I'm saying. That if I want to steal your Eved, you feel, I could do something which I couldn't do to your Karka. I can't hide your Karka. Your Karka is there. It's registered in the municipality, the land registry. I can't steal it. I can't remove it. It's yours wherever it is. I can lock you up, but I can't lock up the Karka. In the case of an Eved, if you own an Eved and I want to steal your Eved, I really can steal that Eved. And therefore, a mayor insists that an Eved lends itself to Gzela, right? It's as an object, it lends itself to Gzela. And Mela, there's Halach of Shinui Koneh. And Afkamina is going to be there. A mayor holds that if the Eved becomes an alter Eved, then since if you accept the principle of Shinui, the Eved is now Konui to whom? To the Gazlan. And therefore, the Gazlan has no right to say a racial cholofanech, and even Rameir should agree in principle that what? That Mishalim Kidmei HaGzela. The Gemara says, Toshma, I have another proof. He gave his wool over to a dyer, Litzva Bo Adam, Utsavo Shachar. I mean, what are you, blind? I asked you for black. That's what I commissioned. And you made it red. Shachar Utsavo Adam. Is Rameir Omer? Rameir says, no same to me, Tzamro. According to Rabbi Meir, there's a halacha that the gazlan, in this case, it's a funny kind of a gazlan.
Yep.
The dyer is not a gazlan in the classical sense of a criminal. You know, he's a robber in that sense. But on the other hand, when he changes the object, he basically removes it from the reshus of the nigzal. So if I define gzela not in terms of the moral, ethical dimension, but gzela means whenever you take someone's possession or property out of his domain, out of his reshus, and you bring it into your reshus, that itself is called gzela. So again, through no fault of his own, again, he should have been a little more careful here, but at least through no intention of his own, he, the dyer, the tzoveh, stole the object.
But this shinui is a little different, because if he said to make it black and he made it black, he also caused a shinui. You wouldn't say he's kohen then.
Right, but in that case, the nigzal, since he commissioned him to paint it black, and in fact he did paint it black, then the laborer, in this case the dyer, is working under the commission as so to speak, the shliach, the extension of the owner, and that's not called zela. But if, on the other hand, he changes the object in such a way that the nigzal is not happy with it, then in effect he's taken the object out of the reshus of the nigzal.
No, I understand, but what's different is that he's not being shown it. The shinui isn't that a change it from its original state to the color it is now. The shinui is a change it from what your intent was to what it is now. So I'm being shown something that doesn't even exist yet. Because if I change it from its original status, that doesn't, by definition, make it a shinui, because I might have changed it to what you wanted to, and it's not a shinui then. So it's not parallel in my mind to the original.
Okay,
history.
Maybe you're right. I don't know.
But it doesn't mean it hasn't mixed enough. I mean, I'm just saying.
Right. So again, what is Rabban Paskin in this case? Who owns the wool? Right? Who owns the black wool or the red wool, you know, that was changed? The Tzoveya. Right? Because he says, Nosein Dumei Tzamro. That means that Rabbi Meir certainly embraces the shita that shinui is kona. Oh, so the Gemara is medayik now. It says dmei samro in, but samro v'shibcho lo. Dmei samro in, dmei samro v'shibcho lo. Interesting. The wool has now increased its value. Again, he may not want it black, but other people will buy it black, or the other way around. So now something that was worth 100 in its original natural state is now worth 150. How much does the dyer have to pay? He has to pay only 100, correct? Because he pays the value of the raw material. In other words, now the dyer has pocketed a profit of 50 because he can sell dyed wool on the market for an extra 50. Is the maid samro v'shvivcho boy lemesifle, that saboy would have to return the wool as it is, dyed, which means that the nigzal gets the full 150, he gets the value, elolav shmamina, kasav rabbi meir shinui kone. You see that shinui is kone. Now at this point in the development of the sugya, as we read the next line, keep in mind that the Gemara thinks that whenever you're a gazlan, even if you're not guilty of a criminal act of gzela, but you're a gazlan simply because you took the object out of the rishus of the nigzal, then if you hold like the second side of Rabbeinu that there's such a thing called knas, the knas itself should apply. And that's what the Gemara says now. V'hacha knasa hu dekakonis. What does it mean, v'hacha hu knasa hu dekakonis? Let's say, for example, he stole a sheep and he cut off the shearings of the sheep. Is Rav Meir says he has to return even the shearings, or in the case of the parah who bears the vlat? You just finished telling me that Rav Meir holds shinui kona, and therefore the dyer is allowed to pocket the object. Why doesn't he pocket the vlat or the giza? The answer is knasa hu dekakonis. That in the case of stealing a pregnant cow, we're going to consider him, we're going to say that we're going to suspend the principle of shinui kona. He's going to have to return even the vlad and even the giza. Now, if that be the case, why not impose a knas even on the case of the dyer? And I think there's no other way of going here is to say that no, the Gemara at this point just the opposite is of the opinion that a knas only applies to what? What kind of a gazlan? Amazing gazlan, right? A gazlan who's morally, ethically guilty as accused of a crime. Shmamina. Now the Gemara concludes that really, according to Rav Meir, shini is kona. And if shini is kona, why is it that the gazlan, according to Rav Meir, has to return the giza and the vlad? The answer is because of knas. In the case of a dyer, he threw kinyan shini was kona the tzemer that he dyed. He now pockets the wool, the dyed wool, and makes a profit on the market because shinui is kona. What about the knas? We don't want a gazlan, a chote, to be niskar. And the answer is that he's not considered a chote.
But the dyer is not a gazlan. The dyer is committed bashir.
If I steal something through shinui, that's called hotzah mirshus bailin. But if I did it inadvertently, without intention, that's called what? That's called shogeg.
Why can't you say that the shvach is relative to?
I hear that I didn't realize what time it is when you're having fun. And time
relative
clock.
To the owner's value of perception. So if it's not a shvach to the owner of the wool, he didn't want the red color. For him, it's not a shvach, so you can't class him a shvach. But it's a shvach relative to the owner.
I guess the Gemara is operating with the premise here that shvach is objective in terms of its market value. If you can sell it at that price, that's called shvach.